So I'm so glad to be here again with you. It's been a few years. Some of you may remember when I was here last time. And I'm so glad to be back in this beautiful congregation. And you have a great, lovely minister, Jennifer, as you already know, who is doing her best to lead you to beloved community. And as I and my congregation in Annapolis, and it's been a long trek to get me to be standing here today and to be announcing and sharing with you information about a new ministry I've started and am starting. To get me to that information about Awake Ministries, I want to start first with an article in the Washington Post that came out in October that featured myself and three other African Americans. The article in particular was looking at black folk who were in odd religious traditions. So they interviewed a Scientologist. I can't remember the rest. Maybe one was a Mormon, but I know one was a Unitarian Universalist. Section B2. The Other Believers. John Crestwell, a Black Unitarian Universalist, by Aaron Williams. The Reverend John Crestwell, 43, is the Minister of Outreach, Leadership, and Evangelism at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Annapolis. And this is his story. A Unitarian Universalist is how I describe myself, but if I describe my theology, I would describe my theology as a deist, humanist, existentialist with a shot of Christianity and a twist of Taoism. If someone said, well, what does John believe? They would find my belief system within all those different faiths. And Unitarian Universalism gives me that space to be that. Instead of telling people I'm all of what I just said, I simply tell them I'm a Unitarian Universalist. I always went to church, starting at the age of 10. I grew up in the United Methodist Church. And the church was always good to me. It helped instill values and a support system. So I'm thankful to that church. But somewhere around the time I turned 16, a very pivotal year, I really began to think I was called to ministry through a series of dreams that I had had. I'm a very vivid dreamer. And also in that same year, I was put in a Martin Luther King speaking contest. That was pivotal because from that point on, I began to ask questions about religion and about King's theology and what shaped him. I was always curious, how did he get to this point and how did his thinking evolve? Most people think Dr. King was a fundamentalist Christian. He actually wasn't. He was more of a person who believed in the teachings of Jesus, Jesus as a model to live our lives, not so much to be worshipped. Now, I'll add from that, we know that from the article that by Rosemary Bray McNatt years ago about Dr. King, and when she interviewed Coretta Scott, and Coretta said, oh, yes, we attended a Unitarian church while Martin was working on his PhD, and we thought about joining the church, but we really felt that we could not lead a movement with the Unitarian Universalist Church. In essence, he felt that we were too white. I actually had a scholarship to go to seminary, but those questions lingered. I was trying to put them behind me, and so I would slip from biblical fundamentalism to my skepticism back and forth. It didn't go well my first year. In fact, I think I had a low C average, and the fact is I didn't write this in here, but I lost my scholarship after 1 year. I contemplated leaving, but I stayed. I eventually became the person in seminary when I would raise my hand, my professor would say, oh boy, because the skeptic started asking questions. I began to see religion in a different light. But I didn't know if there was a place for me. I was reading a religious almanac, Religions in America by Leo Rostin. Eventually, I got to Unitarian Universalism in the back. And when I read it, I just literally cried. It was manna from heaven, as I've said before. Oh my God, this is exactly what I believe. There'd never been a religion that I could read everything on a page and agree with its beliefs, everything. I knew then and there I was going to be a Unitarian Universalist. What I did not know was that I was going to be walking into a very non-diverse religion. Virtually 95% of Unitarian Universalists are white. And it may be higher than that now. I don't know. It didn't matter. What I cared about was the fact that these people represented my belief system. I've been involved in a process to help racially reconcile Unitarian Universalism. I've been placed in a cause that I did not necessarily expect. But they do believe in Dr. King's vision of beloved community, and the first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of all people. Then I go on to say these words, these really hard words. Upper middle class, well-educated white folk want to talk about the issues and think about the issues, but many do not want to be made to feel uncomfortable because this is their church. This is where they find comfort and solace. I walked into the first Unitarian church I had ever been a part of in 2000. And it was a mostly white church. But I was immediately embraced by the minister there because he knew we were coming. In fact, the district executive had called him and said, "There's a black family coming." So he was extremely nice. We walked in, we were embraced by the entire congregation, truly, authentically embraced. And believe it or not, I eventually became the minister of that church. We became a very diverse church, probably one of the most diverse Unitarian churches in the country. We became a breakthrough congregation and got an award for it. And then later I was called to the church in Annapolis, or accepted a call. And now we're on the same journey to become more welcoming to people of color. Because we know that we can't truly be Unitarian Universalism if we're not looking like what we feel the world should look like. Since I've been there, the church has gotten more diverse. We've added a Sounds of Spirit choir and band, and we're doing a lot better. We're only 10% racially diverse, but we're working on it. I want to create a Unitarian Universalism. I will create a Unitarian Universalism that reflects who I am, where I'm from, and what I believe. Where I am, who I am, where I am, and what I'm from, and what I believe. I don't want to talk politics this morning, but I have to say to you, I don't care what party you are. When I watched a television set, and I looked, and I saw at the DNC all of the faces that represented all the people of the world, I felt that's the way my religion should look. I said to myself over and over again, why does not my faith look this way? Why does my faith represent more of the human family? What is going on? What is this all about? There's so many factors. There's so many reasons we're not there. One is we have to be willing to create an ends statement. We do that in the board, the end statement. Where is it that we're trying to go? What is the end result? If the end result is beloved community, then what are we talking about? Are we just saying some nice term that Dr. King used over and over again? What do we see as beloved community? And I would venture to say that if you talk to people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, they would all have different versions of what they think the beloved community is. And that's okay. But we need to know specifically as churches, as Unitarian Universalist churches, where are we trying to go theologically, values-wise, spiritually? Where do we want to go? Beloved community to me is this. It is a vision, a picture of what I saw on television of all races and creeds all together. But it's more than that. It's just not what we look like. It's opportunity. It's equal opportunity. It's equal access. Being able to worship wherever you want to worship. Marry whomever you wish to marry. This is beloved community, a place that we're all talking about moving toward. Now, if that is the vision, that is our global end statement of our faith, then everything that we do is working toward that global end statement of making that become manifest. You see? So then we have to also come to grips with the reality of the world we want and the world that exists now. And in the world that exists now, there are what we call affinity groups. And in my understanding of people, places, and things, there will also be always be affinity groups. Now, what is an affinity group? Well, affinity group is a group where people who think the same or similarly, have similar likes, hobbies, this sort of thing, come together and spend time together. So when women get together to talk about the men, that's an affinity group. When men get together to talk about the women, that's an affinity group. We have a GBLT group within our church that meets and they go to restaurants together, they spend time together. That's an affinity group, you know. My first General Assembly, I didn't know anything that was happening or what this religion was doing. I didn't know what was going on, but I was standing beside this booth that said Diverse Revolutionary Unitarian Universalist Multicultural Ministries, and they were like, they saw me and said, come on over here, and they were telling me about DRUM, this group, this affinity group within Unitarian Universalism for people of color. And I'm standing there, we're talking, and this older white couple walks by and yells out, that's segregation. That is wrong. That should not exist in our religion. And I didn't know how to respond to that. In fact, I still don't know how to respond to that. But I think Unitarian Universalists get hung up on, and I think it's probably from a civil rights paradigm, which we're not in the civil rights paradigm anymore. We are moving to a new paradigm in this age of Aquarius, this age of consciousness rising. We're moving away from this civil rights paradigm of color orientation, black and white and red and brown and all these labels. We're moving away from that to a more people-oriented construct. What was going on there was the issue of affinity. That somehow, if it's a group of, if you take the Korean Methodist Church, nobody has a problem with that, right? Or even the Latino Catholics who, but if you, because of the history of this country, if you take a group of African Americans and put them together and they say they're an affinity group, oh, that's wrong. Because that history of separatism. Let me tell you something about African Americans, if I can boldly say. Black folks did not necessarily want integration. Here's what they wanted. Equal opportunity, fairness, equality, equal pay for equal work. There's some sociologists who argue that the black community has been worse off since integration. I don't know. That's not my point this morning. I'm saying we need to get off this ideal of segregation as, you know, oh, these people are segregated. Oh, these people are being over here. Oh, and think about issues of affinity groups and think about issues of equality. Think about issues of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. The fact is, 20-somethings are not going to be as interested in what 50-somethings are doing. It's never going to be that way. People are going to separate into their different groups. Now, once we get that behind us, we can begin to talk about how to express Unitarian Universalism to a new generation of people. Because, you know, churches do go out of business. And Peter Morales, our president, has preached it. We are going out of business. Not all our churches, but many of them, some of them. Because they have to continuously become relevant. We sit and talk about the issues and talk about segregation and why aren't these people coming? And we haven't invited. We haven't thought of new and innovative ideas to reinvent ourselves. Who says that church is just a Sunday morning experience? What if this were a spiritual center? What if this were a spiritual center? And it already is. And there's a Buddhist practitioners group, and there's a Full Circle Earth-Centered group, and there's a large group of young people, 18 to 40 years old, who come during the week and worship together, and there's a minister leading them. And there's a more traditional service on Sunday, and there's another kind of service. Maybe it's all Korean, or maybe it's all Latino, Latina. This is Unitarian Universalism, making ourselves relevant to the communities that we serve, and not just relevant to ourselves, which is what we've done for far too long, and justified our way out of doing the work that is necessary to save humanity. Yes, I said, save humanity. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because the current stories and paradigms that are being shared are more exclusive and detrimental to the long-term well-being of the human species. Our values, as they are becoming, with marriage equality being passed in Maryland and other states, I'm appreciative of that. Our values are becoming more and more mainstream. That is a wonderful thing, but we have to continue our work. And people need to know that there's a place for them still to come to work out their theology and their struggles and their pains and to celebrate their joys. We can be that place. But it takes a long time for a congregation to transform into that place. In other words, this vision that I've laid out of a spiritual center, of being a place where people can come express their UU values, it takes a while. Because, again, it starts with the global end statement. And then it's all about, you know, what are my bylaws in my church say? And this is all of the work we've done in Annapolis since I've been here. This is my fourth year. We're trying to get, this is a DNA thing we're talking about, right? You got to get down to the structure of this and say, how do we want to express our religion and in the future? What do we want it to look like? Maybe we couldn't do it, and maybe we never were a diverse church, but how can we do it so that future generations can walk into what we envisioned? We start at the grassroots DNA level of our church and rebuild it from there in the words, phrases, and clauses, and we build it out from there. And eventually we slowly add one thing and another, and next thing you know, generation passes, and we have a new kind of Unitarian Universalism flourishing. This is what I'm proposing to you this morning, a new kind of Unitarian Universalism that is flourishing. And that's what my ministry is about. Awake Ministries. Having spent time leading a congregation and helping them become more racially diverse, but running into all kinds of pitfalls when I brought my house band in and singers. And it's just generational. That's all I can say. Maybe some of it was racial, but a lot of it was generational. And having come to a church that wrote in their search packet what they wanted to become, they wanted to be more vibrant and vital and have more diversity and all of the good things that we write and believe. But hard to practice, as it says, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And getting to the point where I'm wondering if this faith has a place for me. I'm tired of having to explain everything. Well, we need to do this because of that and this. Well, I don't understand why we have to change that. Knowing that I can walk up the street and go and feel the kind of cultural feel I need to worship and yet be in a place where it is lyrically, verbally flawed, but can walk in and automatically feel at home. Culture runs deep. So what can we do? I don't know. What can we do? Let's start talking about it. And so Fred and I did. We started talking about it. He's the senior minister at my church. What are your gifts? What do you want to do? Well, I'm a UU evangelist, man. I want to find UUs. I want to find people of color. Here I am, an African-American, born in America after my ancestors spent 300 years in slavery. How did I get to be born in such a time to be able to sit, stand in a nice suit and articulate what I am articulating, freedom of the pulpit and not be in chains. I am not here because of luck. I am here because Spirit placed me here and said, to whom much is given, much is required. I place you there to be a voice crying out in the wilderness to speak truth to power. And that's why I'm here. And that's why we created Awake Ministries, to ask people to live boldly and compassionately, to create a ministry that is going to be during the week, Tuesday nights, and part of my entire ministry portfolio. We have a prison ministry, have mentoring programs, and life coaching, and a digital social media aspect. I would love to have these two screens, but after I found out how much it costs, had to be down the road. Am I trying to grow a significant, we have 600 members, am I trying to grow a significant church within a church? Absolutely. Will this church target 18 to 40-year-olds? Yes. People of color? Yes. Those who've been marginalized or underrepresented? Absolutely. That's my target. Can people who are 60 or 70 come? Absolutely. But you're not my target. Absolutely, you can come. It's just like on a Madison Avenue. Our target's women 18 to 24, but if a woman 25 decides to buy, they're not going to say no. So this is Awake Ministries. Awake is inspired by the early Gnostics, who believed that we were all asleep and must be awakened from our slumber to find our true essence. Gnostic, to know, you get that word out of gnosis. We get words like diagnosis, hypnosis, acknowledge from this early religious sect. I like to say to people, awaken to the possibilities within you. Awake, I've created an acronym. I haven't figured out if I'm going to keep this or not. Actualize your inner wisdom. Awaken to your karma and engage the process, and you will manifest your personal greatness. So this is the ministry. The ministry, the worship service will be vibrant. We have what we call the Awake Singers, three ladies, two from the community in Annapolis, African-American, and a full band. I'm investing the church and the Unitarian Universalist funding panel. We're putting in over $30,000 just in the music. If this works, this could be a potential model for our faith. Because the church, UUCA, pays my salary and my benefits. They take good care of me as their associate minister. And they will continue to do that as I turn my attention to Awake Ministries. But they're saying, here's what we wrote on our end statement. Here's what we did with our bylaws. Here's what we have called you to be our associate minister through the Diversity of Ministry Initiative. We want you to go do this. This is the kind of power you have to make manifest the beloved community. We sit back on our hands. What can I do? Oh, I want more. You have the power. And the people, the resources, all of it's out there. There is no limit to what we can do to fundamentally change this country and ultimately have that ripple effect that will change our world. This faith came to me in a low period, $30,000 in debt from seminary, lost my scholarship, finished, didn't know what to do, wasn't going to be a Methodist, sitting around depressed, and there it was, a book I picked up. From one of those book swap things. And in the back was Our Faith. And I rose like manna from heaven and said, my gosh, this is it. And there's got to be millions of people out there just like me who want to have that experience of religion, that emotive experience. They want to shout and dance and sing and celebrate and still have that rational aspect too, not leave their brain at the door. Now, I recognize that's not all of you here, but can you just allow me to have a place for them to go to? Can I be the minister of those people, please? Will you let me? I can't hear you. Will you let me?
Yes.
Is it okay if I do that?
Yes.
You think you can help during this in this process too?
Yes.
I don't know. You said, oh, yeah. Now, number 502. I'm going to read it one more time and I'm going to sit down. Now is the accepted time. Not tomorrow. Not some more convenient season. It is today that our best work can be done, and not some future day or future year. It is today, my friends, that we fit ourselves for the greater usefulness of tomorrow. Today, for you, is the seed time. Now are the hours of work. And tomorrow, some future generation, the harvest and the playtime. Amen.